evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Wall of Power Radio Hour. This is your host, Paul Metzen. I want to wish you a very happy new year. Not only just a new year, but a happy new decade. Let's put all of everything behind us. And like Bob Dylan said in my favorite Bob Dylan tune, "It's all over now, baby blue. Strike another match. Go start anew." Speaking of Bob Dylan, he made his New York City debut at a folk club called Folk City that was run by a gentleman named Mike Porco. It opened up June 1st, 1960, and it's had literally a who's who of American musicians perform there. It was the ground zero of the folk scare in the 1960s. Besides Bob Dylan, early folk singers included Eric Anderson, Joan Baez, Oscar Brand, the Clancy Brothers, Reverend Gary Davis, Doc Watson, others like the great Ramblin' Jack Elliott, Allen Ginsberg, John Lee Hooker, and then later on, Patti Smith, Husker Du, an early version of Simon & Garfunkel back when they were called Cain and Guard, and it's where the Rolling Thunder Review was put together with Bob Dylan when he went on the road in 1975. Rolling Stone magazine called Folk City one of the three greatest music venues in the world, along with the Cavern and CBGB's. Like I said, Mike Porco owned the place when it got going in 1960. He actually signed as a guardian, legal guardian for Bob Dylan, because Bob was only 19 or 20 at the time. They're doing a great 60th anniversary for Folk City on Friday, January 24th at the Iridium in Times Square in New York City. I'm honored to say I've been invited to play a song there myself. Who I have on the phone is a fellow I've never met personally, although I had him on the show about 5 years ago, the grandson of Mike Porco, and my guest all night tonight on the Wall of Power Radio Hour, his grandson, Bob Porco. Bob, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Thanks for having me.
Tell people out there a little bit more about the history of Folk City and your grandfather's place in such a great movement in American music.
Yeah, I think your description was spot on and pretty thorough. And I like to actually just say that what happened there, and describing the history of Dirty Folk City and Mike Porco's story, is it borders on myth.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's almost unfathomable to think that a tiny little Italian eatery, that's what it was when my grandfather bought it in 1952, and then for 7 years had zero music. Well, he had roaming musicians during dinnertime hours, but he had no night business to speak of until Izzy Young walked in late 1959. Izzy Young of the Folklore Center on McDougal Street, and he said, "You know, you have a cabaret license, and you sell food. We have a little idea. We can get musicians in here, and let's make this a folk cabaret." And that's what it became. It became the first, honest to God, as Dave Van Ronk put it, honest to God folk cabaret in New York. And that's pretty historic.
And let me just jump in here for a minute, Bob. And it started out, also, if you do some research, and I suggest anybody out there that wants to read about the history of American music by way of Folk City, do a little Googling on it, because it's all over the internet. But it was really, it started out as kind of really one of the first open mics, right?
Yeah. My grandfather likes to, or did for the many years that he was interviewed after 1960, he liked to say that It was an invention. It was an invention of his. A musician named Logan English, a friend of the Guthrie family in Cisco, Houston, and Oscar Brand and Charlie Rothschild, who was the first booking agent who took over after Izzy Young departed in May of 1960. So yeah, the four of them got together and were sitting around. Mike Porco was thinking he'd like to have a talent night on the seventh day that they were normally closed on Monday. And they said, don't call it a talent night. Call it a hootenanny. When Pete Seeger wants to get together and have a little session of playing, they say, let's get together and have a little hootenanny. So the Monday night hootenanny started in essentially around February of 1960, so only about 4 or 5 weeks after first having music at Gertie's Folk City. Or it was Gertie's at that time. Gertie's, it was called the fifth peg.
Okay.
Like the fifth peg of a banjo. That's what Izzy Young, that's the name that was donated there by Eric Darling. For those 6 nights, it was Izzy's club at Mike Porco's place. But then on Monday, Mike Porco had this, quote, talent night. And that was the actual first open mic.
Wow.
In New York. And, maybe there was something like that elsewhere. But as far as I know, my grandfather invented the open mic.
God bless Mike Porco. Paul McCartney told me years ago, they said Mets would never drop names. But years ago, I played out at the tribute to Woody Guthrie in 96 at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I happened to be in a van with Pete Seeger, Harold Leventhal's wife, Toshi, Jimmy LaFave, the late, great, a very good friend of mine who passed away a couple years ago, a guy named Greg Johnson, who ran a place called The Blue Door. And Pete was telling the story, and I have it all on videotape. Jimmy actually videotaped it. And Pete goes, yes, well, you've met Pete, you know how he speaks. He's in a very proper New England accent. He said, yes, I remember Woody and I were out in Seattle, and it's the first in 1938, and it's the first time I heard the word hootenanny. And it was like, it was like talking to Moses, and Moses goes, yes, this is when I came up with the third commandment, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That's a good one. I haven't heard that where the word came from or what year the origin was.
Yeah, well, that's when Pete Seeger heard it, and Pete never told a lie. So we've got just a few minutes left in this first segment. We've got Bob Porco, the grandson of the great Mike Porco from Folk City, on the Wall of Power Radio Hour for the whole show tonight. So we are, once again, thank you for having me at the 60th anniversary. But tell the people out there, especially that have friends in New York, of course, this will be podcast too, but the show that's going on Friday, January 24th at the Iridium.
Yeah, awesome. The one funny thing, though, I have to say to segue into that is this is currently the year of the pig in Chinese lunar calendar. And, you know, the last name Porco means in Italian pig.
Oh, is that right? Perfect.
And the last day is Friday the 24th. So
wow.
The very last day of the last lunar pig year. We will have the 60th anniversary for Gertie's, and I like to call it Gertie's, even though, you know, mostly it's referred to as Folk City, but,
right.
And, you know, by the time I was born, it was already mostly just referred to as Folk City. It was in two locations, West 4th Street and then West 3rd Street, and I'm just so lucky to have Mike's name and be able to honor him and do these shows. And I did the 50th 10 years ago, obviously, and so now coming up in on the 24th, we're gonna have the very first person that worked at the club when it was first called for Folk City. Like I said, it was the fifth peg for 5 months, and then Izzy said, you can't use that name anymore, find your own name. And that's when Charlie Rothschild and Mike Porco they came up with the name Folk City in June of 1960. The first performer to be booked was Carolyn Hester, and she's going to be playing with us this 3 weeks from now. And it's just amazing that she's coming. She's bringing her daughter, so that's a generational thing there. That's pretty cool that, you know, she plays in a trio with her own children.
Fantastic.
Rob Stoner is going to be the band leader. Of course, he's been background of a lot of songs on the radio, The Day the Music Died, Don McLean, played on Bob Dylan's Desire album, and was the band leader for the Rolling Thunder Review tour, both incarnations in 75 and then later in 76. We've got yourself, Paul Metza, representing the Iron Range. We have James Maddock, who is more of a contemporary of mine, but one of the more seasoned and one of the best songwriters we have going this day and age, so I'm eager to work with him. Kerry Roach, of the famous folk rock pioneer Roach Sisters, Maggie, Suzzy, and Terry. It was a duo of Maggie and Terry. Maggie was the primary songwriter back in the late 60s when they became a singing duo. They fashioned themselves after Simon and Garfunkel, who also started at Folk City. So again, there's part of the myth.
Right.
Terry and Maggie were first managed by Dave Van Ronk's wife, Terry.
Terry Thall.
And she said, well, let's take you over to the Hoots to see if we can get you on stage at Folk City. And sure enough, they eventually got signed to Warner Brothers and then became a trio later on. And at one point in the 70s, Maggie and Terry actually were barmaids at Folk City, working for Mike Porco.
And we also have, we're coming up on a break, but the great Willie Niles on the show. Willie Niles. We've got Bob Porco on for the whole show tonight on the Wall and Power Radio Hour. We'll be right back.
To the cities, I've rambled through the towns, been away to join the circuits, I met folks of high renown. I've climbed the highest mountains, I've sailed the deepest sea, I've been all around the world, yeah, but there's only one place for me. There's no place like home, there's no place like home. Wherever you may wander, wherever you may roam, there's no place like home, there's no place like home. When all is said and all is done, there's no place like
the number one source of the Twin Cities gay scene is All Digital. Follow Twin Cities Gay Scene on Facebook and Twitter. Sign up for the Scene Shot email blast for weekly updates and chances to win great prizes. No app is needed to view the bi-weekly web editions of Scene. It's GLBTQ media for the mobile generation. Find it all at TwinCitiesGayScene.com. That's TwinCitiesGayScene.com.
This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell.
Freddie, this generation of the baby boomers, people are living longer, so the baby boomers are taking care of elderly parents.
Let's talk about your health, and specifically, let's talk about Medicare. Our show features the concerns of America's 78 million baby boomers in employment, finance, health and nutrition, and even entertainment.
Join us for New Beginnings, Saturday mornings at 11, brought to you in part by Vision Loss Resources.
In the Army National Guard, family means everything.
Our parents, they were really supportive that all five of us would join. I got my education because of the Guard. I got to travel a little bit and experience a whole different culture. It helped me get my job, helped me pay for my house.
Serving part-time in the Army National Guard instills pride that you and your family will share. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard. Aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station.
At Better Futures Minnesota, we transform the lives of men and support Minnesota's environment by working towards zero waste. Our approach reaffirms each man's dignity and supports self-sufficiency. Better Futures Minnesota is a work training model. Through our reuse, retail warehouse, and supervised work crews with specialized in residential and commercial building deconstruction, property maintenance, appliance recycling, and janitorial services, we demonstrate ways to employ hard-to-employ men on a pathway to independence. Hire our work crews at BetterFuturesMinnesota.com.
Located just south of downtown Minneapolis, the Blaisdell is the perfect venue for your next event. The Blaisdell is a fresh, modern, newly remodeled historic mansion with spaces that can accommodate groups of 25 to 700. While perfect for weddings, the Blaisdell also includes rooms with high-tech audio and video equipment for your company's next gathering. So whether it's a dream wedding or impressing colleagues and clients, choose the Blaisdell as your next event venue. Select dates are still available. Learn more at theblaisdell.com.
I'm Nick Slavik, proprietor of the Nick Slavik Painting and Restoration Company. I speak nationally and internationally on the subjects of entrepreneurship, trades reform, apprenticeship, craftsmanship, and coding science. I've created a rigorous apprenticeship program where I find, train, inspire, and mentor young people in my craft. The result is an ultra-professional crew of craftspeople that cares about their work and your project. We're not like other contractors. Visit NICKSLAVIK.com. That's NickSlavik.com to learn more.
That was a little early Bob Dylan, and Bob Dylan played his first gig at Gertie's Folk City in Greenwich Village, and his, I believe his union or cabaret card was signed by the proprietor, Mike Porco. Mike Porco's grandson, Bob Porco, is with me on the show all night tonight. Can you tell us a little bit more, Bob, about how that whole thing came about where Mike signed signed that card for Mr. Dylan?
Yeah, I actually have been doing some research a lot for the last 10 years, and since 2013 I've been working on Mike Porco's bio and working on a film, and I've interviewed many people, and you know, I've been basically trying to retrace a lot of footsteps, and which led me to the NYU, I think it's called the BOBST building, B-O-B,
okay. Enough.
B-O-B-S-T is the name of the research library.
Take what you have gathered from coincidence, right?
Yeah, BOBST. And I found the crate that would have possibly had the contract that was signed.
Wow.
And but cliffhanger or spoiler alert, there was nothing in there.
So right,
I took through every piece of paper, and more than likely, I mean, somewhere in the last 50 years, somebody else had gotten to that thing and either pilfered it, or it's somewhere, or it just doesn't exist. You know, it's possible that it just was mixed in with 18,000 other union contracts. But back in those days, in New York, if you wanted to play at a place that had alcohol, you had to have a cabaret license. Small, little, and you went to the cop shop, and you got fingerprinted and a mugshot, and they put you on record.
Wow.
And I basically was just seeing if you had a previous record, if you were dealing in drugs and things like that. There's all kinds of stories of other people, Thelonious Monk, for instance, who couldn't play in places because he was busted for a minor charge, what would be a misdemeanor today or nothing today.
And Billie Holiday, who the cops kind of railroaded more than once. Yeah, that was a very important piece of paper to have to work
Absolutely.
As a musician.
Lord Buckley, if people know about the Lord Buckley story, his career basically just went into the crapper and you know, never came out because he couldn't get a cabaret card. Anyway, Mike Porco was taking a fancy to the young Bob Dylan, who at the time was only 19, had been playing the hoots, and everyone noticed his timing and his wit and skill, and everyone was taking a shine to him, and they said, why don't you ask Mike to hire you for an opening act, you know? And as Mike Porco was recorded and talking about it, he said, you know, Bob Dylan never asked me for the job. I had to ask him to work the gig.
Right.
So April, the gig was starting, the booking was actually opening for John Lee Hooker, April 11th, 1961. So about April 5th or April 6th, perhaps even as late as April 9th, which was another momentous day in the village, because that was the day that Izzy Young and the Beatnik riot happened, the exact day, April 9th, 1961. It's very possible that that day, Mike Porco and Bob Dylan were down getting a mugshot taken for the cabaret card. Now, it just so happened that Mike Porco's club, he was very on the up and up and fair with everybody, which meant everyone got paid $90 a week at that time. 1960, that's quite a lot of money.
Yeah.
But the reason why he didn't have to negotiate with everybody was because he was a union shop, and so you also had to be a member of the 802 union, the musicians union in New York. And so on the same day, they went and signed up as to get his union card or be a member of the union and have the cabaret card. Now at the union shop, Mike Porco and Bob Dylan, this was what Mike Porco would do for many people, not just Bob Dylan. He did it for John Hammond. He did it for Phil Oakes, probably. You know,
wow.
I'm hiring this person to work my club this weekend. I'm going to make sure that he goes and joins the union, even if I have to walk him down there myself.
Wow.
So, sure enough, there they are, and the union president says, all right, we just need a signature here from your mother. And Dylan famously says, well, I ain't got no mother. Okay, well, we need your father's signature. I ain't got no father. And he's still not 20 years old. He was turning 20
right.
A month after this gig. So he turned to Mike Porco, would you mind signing as my legal guardian so I can work? And Mike said, you know, would it be okay with you? You think it's all right with your folks? And Bob said, yeah. And, you know, it's funny that it turns out that was a lot more than just foreshadowing or just symbolism, that Bob Dylan asked Mike Porco to be his guardian.
Yeah,
because
right.
they were tight for the rest of Mike Porco's life. You know, they were tight, they were close, and it was evident 15 years later, or 14 years after this fact, when Bob Dylan came and just completely turned the village on its ear again and opened up the Rolling Thunder Review in Mike Porco's little living room there when it was on 3rd Street at the Folk City when it was on West 3rd. And that, of course, was just lionized and made into a Martin Scorsese film. And so you see in the early parts of the movie, there's shots there that have been unseen for 44 years of Bob Dylan and right. Mike Porco having a big embrace and the show starting there. And, you know,
did that have, Bob, let me just jump yeah. in for a second, Bob. Did that it's have a, something to do with Mike's birthday?
Was it Mike's birthday. It was his birthday.
Like his 60th or something, right?
His 61st birthday. So it was
Highway 61.
61. So that was just all coincidental, but I think, you know, for a few weeks or even just maybe as little as a few days beforehand, Bob Dylan and Jacques Levy were discussing, and probably Sam Shepard, you know, Bob had in mind to film Ronaldo and Clara. Where are we going to do this? How are we going to do this? I want to do a tour, yada, yada, yada. He started doing rehearsals at what was then called the Other End, which mm-hmm. is now where the Bitter End sits, but it was basically just an annex of the Bitter End. It was called the Other End, and that's where he was doing a lot of sitting in and sort of watching other people perform. And then a performer you probably know, Jack Hardy.
Sure.
Brother Jack Hardy was planning a 61st surprise birthday party for Mike Porco, October 23rd, 1975. Word spread around the village, and a plot was hatched.
Wow.
And the rest is history. And that's when, essentially, Bob Dylan, as you might imagine, if he's going to throw his shoulders around and take over somewhere, it's going to be his own turf. So he commandeered Folk City for that day. And people are still, I mean, I live here in New York, and I still have a lot of friends in the scene, as it were, and we're still talking about that day, 1975.
Wow,
it still has repercussions.
Bob, I so am enjoying these stories because that history has meant so much to me. We've got Bob Porco on the Wall of Power Radio Hour. We're going to listen to a little music and come back and hear a lot of these cool stories you are not going to hear anywhere else but on my radio show.
This is Ken Hagland, host of Living Healthy and Aging Well, inviting you to listen to our new show airing on Saturdays from noon to 1, where we talk about your health and your life and provide insights to living and aging well. Each week, we provide answers to important questions regarding health care, elder care, end-of-life care, and caregiver support to help you and your loved ones plan for the future and enjoy your highest quality of life today. Please join us every Saturday from noon to 1 for Living Healthy and Aging Well.
Northeast Minneapolis is known for its creativity, and you'll know exactly why when you eat at Hazel's Northeast. Their creatively prepared comfort food will have you coming back week after week. Breakfasts like biscuits and gravy, granola pancakes, and brisket hash. For lunch, homemade soup and one of the best Reubens in town. And don't miss the daily risotto or Chef Ali's ever-changing dinner specials. Come on in, bring the whole family. Hazel's Northeast delivers real good food. Family owned at 29th and Johnson in Minneapolis.
I'm Richard R.J. Eskow, and this week on The Zero Hour, we'll be discussing political corruption, Wall Street shenanigans, our corporate overlords, digital dystopia, and maybe throw in a surprise or two as well. All this and more on The Zero Hour, every Sunday night from 9 until midnight on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Hi, I'm Peter Solak.
And I'm Adam Ostrowski.
We are here at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces to talk about the joy of live fire cooking. Cooking over a live fire is the oldest and most basic form of cooking.
What's new is in the way a fire is handled and its heat is managed.
It's easier to experience and enjoy the smell and taste of food cooked over a live fire.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces sells and installs live fire grills, fire pits, and ovens. Let us help you experience the smell, the taste, the fun of cooking with fire.
Pizza was first made and is still best made in an open fire oven. The radiant and conductive heat of a live fire is unmatched for wood roasting and baking artisan breads too.
Come see the many ways you can cook over a live fire.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces has over 35 working wood and gas units on display at the corner of East Franklin and Riverside Avenue in Minneapolis. More information at woodlandstoves.com. Find the fire that works for you. Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, out of the ordinary products and services since 1977.
With your AM950 weather, I'm Sam Turnberg. Tonight's going to be partly cloudy, low around 6. Tomorrow's cloudy, with a high near 22. Monday, mostly cloudy, with a high near 30. Tuesday, mostly cloudy, with a high near 23. And Wednesday, cloudy, with a high near 19. Is estate planning still on your to-do list, or are you overdue for an update? The new year is a great time to get going on that goal. Get started today with Schroman Law in St. Paul. Call 651-571-2515 or visit schromanlaw.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, of the Wall of Power Radio Hour. This is your host, Paul Metza, rocking into 2020 with a great interview with a fellow by the name of Bob Porco, the grandson of Mike Porco, the proprietor of Gertie's Folk City, called by Rolling Stone one of the top three music venues in the world, next to the Cavern in Liverpool and CBGB's. Bob, I so love hearing some of these stories that I've never heard about Folk City, because when I grew up on the Iron Range. I'm 15 years younger than Dylan, but of course we all knew who he was back then. I used to hitchhike when I was 13 or 14 and stand in front of his house in Hibbing on 7th Avenue and go, man, the guy that walked out of that door ended up in Minneapolis and then New York City and changed American culture almost single-handedly. So when I did my debut, Bob, in 1985 at Folk City, it was like entering the promised land. First of all, I'd been in Greenwich Village before, so there it is. You know, you're on McDougal, you're on Bleecker Street. You know, there's Cafe Bois, there's the Bitter End, there's the Village Gate, and then right across from the Blue Note, one of the world's greatest jazz clubs, is Curtis Folk City. So I walked in there the night before. I have a picture of myself in front of the marquee. In the next few weeks, it was going to be Suzanne Vega, Farron, and others. And I was met at the door by the guy who was working the door that night and was my sound guy the next night to show you how magical New York City was, a fellow by the name of Pat DeNizio.
Oh, yeah.
That was telling me about, he had this band called the Smithereens. And they absolutely blew up in 86.
Yeah.
But so to get some of these stories firsthand by Mike Porker's grandson, number one, thanks for having me on this gig on Friday, January 24th at the Iridium, just in 3 weeks from now. But I want to talk about what I think is so cool about this gig. You've got Willie Nile, you've got Terry Roche, you've got Rob Stoner in the house band, your buddy James Murdoch, but Carolyn Hester, who did the first gig at Gertie's Folk City, she was, correct me if I'm wrong, she was being produced by the greatest talent scout in the history of this country, John Hammond Sr., and she invited a young harmonica player from Minnesota named Bob Dylan to come and play harmonica. And that's where Dylan came on to John Hammond's radar, right?
That's true. That's the story. Now, let me take you back. Just, I guess, who knows how many hours. Could have been only 24 hours. But Carolyn met Bob Dylan at Gertie's. And, you know, Bob at that time was, you know, quite an observer, and but he also was playing as many basket houses and open mics or hoots as he could, and he was sort of a hanger-on to Carolyn because he knew that Carolyn was a signed star. I think she was under a contract with Tradition at first label, and
okay,
and but yeah, she was working for she was at the famous studio for John Hammond, and I think Bob was kept asking her, you need a guitarist, you need a guitarist, you need a guitarist, and she already had a guy by the name of Bruce Langhorne, you know.
Sure, Mr. Tambourine Man. Yeah.
So she didn't need a guitarist, but he said, how about a harp, and this was a story. We'll have to ask Carolyn. Thank God we have her come to the show. I mean, she's, you know,
I can't wait to meet her.
A real connector to the thread that is the Village, you know.
Right, and she had a radio show too as well, didn't she, back in the day?
I think at one time, yeah, she had a little, she had a club that she was running in California with her husband at one point. She's been very active, but we're talking about from the 50s now. Carolyn Hester, I'm still taking you back to that day, but
sure.
she was at the opening day of the Folklore Center with Izzy Young and Happy Traum and whoever else was
on
there playing.
On McDougal.
I was on McDougal, 110 McDougal Street, so that's 1958. And then she's also the first star to play at Gertie's Folk City. And then, of course, 1961, Bob Dylan pesters her to get an invite to up in Broadway, wherever the CBS or Columbia
studios
were. And there's that famous picture of the four of them.
Mm-hmm.
From left to right, it's Bruce. And then it's Bob, who was just playing harp. Carolyn, of course, the star and recording artist. And then all the way far right was a guy named Bill Lee, who was a studio bass player, who is Spike Lee's father.
Right. That's an incredible connection, too. That always blows my mind.
Right. And then backing up into Carolyn's life a little bit, she's from Lubbock, Texas, and I believe that she met Buddy Holly at the studio. She may have worked with Buddy Holly in Texas, and Buddy did make it to New York, never got to play Folk City, but you know, everything was sort of leaning this way, thanks to Buddy. And Buddy, of course, if you know some stories about Bob, I mean, Bob was really enamored with him and inspired. So there's that connection. I think that's probably why Dylan probably, more than one reason why Dylan couldn't take his eyes off Carolyn. Oh,
boy, that's interesting because Lubbock, Texas, right? You know, I mean, besides Buddy Holly and Carolyn Hester, which I did not know about, you've got Joe Ely, you've got the Flatlanders, Jimmy Dale Gilmore, Butch Hancock, Jesse Taylor. I mean, what is in the water down there? I've always wondered. But, you know, the other thing, and maybe you've heard about this, but Dylan saw Buddy Holly just a day or two before he died at the Duluth Armory. And according to Bob in his book Chronicles that was released in 2004, there was some sort of torch that was passed there that night. In fact, a fellow by the name of Nelson French, whose brother ended up buying and living in Bob Dylan's Hibbing House for years, has helped in the last 10 years to really rehab the Duluth Armory. And just this fall, Louis Kemp, who was a childhood buddy of Bob Dylan's, wrote a book called Dylan and Me, and they've actually designated that spot where Louis and Bob just feet away from Buddy Holly saw him play. Yeah. So a lot of circles of coincidence here, but keep going, Bob, wherever you want to pick it up.
I'll stay with that Buddy Holly thing because just to corroborate what you said, I think Dylan brought it up again in his Nobel speech, his Nobel Prize,
2018,
quote unquote lecture, which was basically just a YouTube clip that he put out.
Right.
But I think he spoke there about how he made eye contact with Buddy Holly from the stage.
Exactly.
It was a cold night, and something transferred into him there. And, you know, who's going to doubt that? And, you know, proof's in the pudding.
Well, you know, one other little coincidence here. I had no idea about that connection, which absolutely delights me. But Pat DiNizio, who we were talking about earlier, who was the sound guy when I debuted at Folk City, and then, you know, the great songwriter. From the Smithereens. He ended up at some point buying Buddy Holly's reel-to-reel tape recorder from Buddy's wife, Maria Elena.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I met Pat only once, and oddly enough, it was Willie Nile who introduced the two of us, and it was at Kenny's Castaways.
Yeah, I played there last night.
I guess it was 2011 or 12. So I had known Willie a little bit, and I had known a little bit about, I knew the Smithereens. I was really into that sound that they created, and I knew about Pat, and I knew Pat did sound for Mike Porco back in those days. And I think even after Mike Porco sold the place in 1980 and had been phased out by 82, Pat was still there doing sound and, of course, you know, trying to build up his own brand with the Smithereens.
Yeah, well, then back then when I played there, he was working for a lovely couple, Robbie and Marilyn Wolliver.
Wolliver, right?
Yeah.
So, they took over Folk City and had to close in 87, 86, 87. But Pat and I had a great conversation, and you know, it's one of those conversations that you meet with somebody and you're a little starstruck, but you're on 2 feet.
Yeah.
And you're looking at this guy face to face, and you know, you've seen him on MTV a million times, and you know, by this point now, I could say at that point I had met so many of Mike Porco's famous friends face-to-face that sometimes I'm, you know, tongue-tied.
Right.
He and I had such a sweet conversation, and he had so many good things to say about Mike. And got a hug from him, and then he went on stage, you know, that kind of crazy stuff. And then like last month, I played a little guitar, and for some reason, drowned in my own tears, came to my head. I have to look up the chords. Let me learn it. So I've been practicing a lot of Pat DiNizio the last month.
Oh, nice.
So for whatever reason, Pat wanted to be part of the 60th, too. And you know, that's it's tough to pay homage to all the people that that you can equate to Folk City, because you're talking about Tom Paxton, Phil Oakes, all the blues masters, you know, Babe Stovall, Roosevelt Sykes, John Hammond.
Oh yeah,
John Hammond Sr. was at the bar. People were at the bar. You know, non performers were also utilizing Folk City as a scouting for talent. Jack Holtzman,
From Electric Records, Grossman, yeah.
Albert Grossman. And then you have the performers that were big enough to play there, sometimes a little too big to play there, but they would still play there. Dave Van Ronk was buddies with Mike Porco for 20 years, but because he was there at the very beginning when Izzy had started it, and Brownie McGee and Sonny Terry,
oh yeah, my hero,
were relied upon a lot early on. And I know all the I went through all the Village Voice ads for 20 years to see exactly who was booked to perform.
Wow.
And Sonny and Terry kept coming back through into the 70s.
Sonny and Brownie, yeah.
Mike Porco, yeah. And the transference of who was in the audience watching these blues masters. You know, I think that's really the biggest contribution that Mike Porco can say, is that he brought people together. Not so much the audience with musicians, but musicians with other musicians is so important, because you have, as Susie Rodolo, Bob Dylan's ex-girlfriend, on the cover of the Freewheeling album, she said in her book, I'm going to try to quote it word for word, was, Gertie's was where the cross-fertilization of musical eras and musical styles crossed paths. I just messed it up. But it forged important links in the chain of American music.
So, hey, Bob, you can read that again, and we can edit that back in.
All right, I don't have it written. Let me say it here.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can, yep.
Gertie's was where musical... it was better the first time around. Gertie's was where the cross-pollinization of musical eras and styles forged important links in the chain of American music.
That's incredible. And Bob Porco, in the last set of the Wall of Power Radio, we're going to talk about, there's a connection with both the television show The Sopranos, and we'll talk a little bit about people like Patti Smith and Husker Du playing Folk City. We'll be right back.
The number one source of the Twin Cities gay scene is All Digital. Follow Twin Cities Gay Scene on Facebook and Twitter. Sign up for the Scene Shot email blast for weekly updates and chances to win great prizes. No app is needed to view the bi-weekly web editions of Scene. It's GLBTQ media for the mobile generation. Find it all at TwinCitiesGayScene.com. That's TwinCitiesGayScene.com.
Native Roots Radio is proud to announce we've added an extra hour.
Yeah, Chuchke, 1 hour goes by too fast.
That's right, Uncle Curtis.
I'll have extra time to share important information about our sacred animals.
And report national and native news from all over the country and Canada.
This new hour is sponsored by Robbins Kaplan LLP, dedicated to redefining excellence for high-stakes litigation representation in Indian country.
Saturdays from 1 to 3 p.m.
We are awake.
Hi, this is Charlie. Dad, don't embarrass me by making me say this.
What does a used iPhone go for today?
Fine. My dad is the greatest fantasy football player of all time, Matt McNeil.
I won our league this year!
Ugh. When I'm getting together with my friends without my dad, we always go in my Sienna. Not only does it drive great in winter conditions, but it can easily fit all my friends with seating up to 8.
My son's friend's parents request he drive because he has a Sienna. It tells you everything you need to know about their safety and reliability. See for yourself at Rudy Luther Toyota, 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
Hello, humans. This is me, Ellie Krug, with Ellie 2.0 Radio on Monday mornings from 7 to 8 a.m. This week's featured idealist is college freshman and long-distance runner Rosalie Fish, who's bravely highlighting the missing and murdered Indigenous women of America. The big interview is with Jessica Greb of Orchestrating Good with Racine, Wisconsin. And in my C-block, I talk about how idealists don't ask for permission. Ellie 2.0 Radio, engaging and real on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Supporting the best local and independently owned restaurants in the Twin Cities has never been easier. You'll find an expansive list of local dining options at eatlocalminnesota.com, from classic American comfort food to authentic flavors from around the world. Cafe Latte offers made-from-scratch soups, salads, sandwiches, and mouth-watering desserts. Stop in the wine bar and enjoy a unique pizza loaded with fresh vegetables and perfectly roasted meats. Over 30 wines by the glass, Cafe Latte highlights Washington State wines and is the perfect destination for date night or an evening with friends. 850 Grand Avenue, St. Paul. Victor's 1959 Cafe has been serving South Minneapolis traditional Cuban food for over 15 years. Victor's is open for breakfast and lunch daily and now accepts dinner reservations too. Stop in and try the Pollo Tropicale or the Sandwich Cubano, which was featured on Food Network. More at eatlocalminnesota.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the fourth set of the Wall of Power Radio Hour. This is your host, Paul Metza. My guest for the whole show tonight, the great Bob Porco, grandson of Mike Porco, the proprietor of the legendary folk club Gertie's Folk City in Greenwich Village in the heart of New York City. Bob, there was, besides all the great folk and blues that happened there in the 60s and 70s, by the 80s now, it started to incorporate some comedy. And Husker Du played there, Patti Smith played there. But let's talk about Uncle Junior from The Sopranos. Tell us a little bit about how he got hooked up with Folk City. Dominic?
Dominic Chianese was always into acting. And he was into music also. And he would hang around the village a lot back in the 60s, 64, 65. And the place to go, of course, was Folk City. If you wanted to see performers up close, it was a tiny little place. So he got to meet Mike. And then, of course, once Mike found his name, and, you know, he's second generation Italian. And
yeah.
His name is Dominic, and Mike's hometown was Domenico in Calabria, Italy. So they struck, they hit a chord right with each other right off the bat. So he said, you know, Mike, I'm an actor, but I can do your emceeing. And he goes, you know, I'll do it for $100 a week. And Mike said, I'll give you $90. So right away, you know, he got to, anyway, Dominic had steady work, but he picked up the guitar. And he was encouraged a lot by many people. There's a recording of Arlo Guthrie, 1966, at Gertie's Folk City. The MC you'll hear introducing Arlo is Dominic Chianese, who later on became Johnny Olin in the Godfather series,
right.
Godfather 2. And then, of course, when he was approaching retirement age, he got offered a gig to be Uncle Junior on The Sopranos, and that's what he did for the next 10 years. And so in 2009, 2010, I was, you know, again, I live in New York, so I was looking for all these people, anybody I could find that were connected to Mike Porco. And I said, for some reason, somebody told me, one of my clients, perhaps, I'm a personal trainer, so one of my clients said, oh, yeah, I know that guy. He's always playing every Sunday at the butcher shop around the corner. You know? And how many corners are there in New York?
Right, you know? Right, a few.
It so happens that my client, who I'm talking about, I didn't even have to cross the street. It was on the block itself. So I had to go to 89th and York, and there's a butcher shop there called Conti's. And there's pictures of Dominic in there, and there's people around. I said, you know, when can I see meet him? And he's like, oh, well, you know, they play here every day, every Friday at 10:30. So he and I struck up a bond, and he's become my goomba, and I haven't talked to him in a little while, but I asked him to MC the 50th anniversary 10 years ago, and when I was doing interviews for people, I was interviewing everybody to find out as much as I could, and I was just using a pen and paper, just taking notes, which I have, and I eventually went to film. But he was talking all about Sopranos and Sopranos this and Sopranos that, and I said, you know, I haven't had TV since 1996. I've never watched it.
Right.
And he said, oh, good for you. I try to tell my grandkids, get off the TV, everybody's watching TV. So he's just a regular guy, and just
are you still in touch?
Yeah, we're still in touch. We haven't spoken. It's these days it's sort of emails and such, but we haven't spoken in some time.
Well, you got to invite them to the Eurythm and on January 24th.
Yeah,
if your guest list is getting tight, I'll buy his gal a ticket. We've only got about 30 seconds left. Bob Porco, producer of the 60th anniversary of Gertie's Folk City, Friday, January 24th. Give us some links, Facebook and otherwise, how people can get know more about this event and learn the history of Folk City.
Yeah, I think if you go to Facebook, you'll find, not my name, but Mike Porco, P-O-R-C-O. You'll find him and a lot of information. If you go for the show, it's at the Iridium. So the Iridium, or Iridium.com, I believe, is the site. And then search Gertie's Folk City at 60 is the name of the show. And that's where the tickets will be sold. And I have a blog that has some intermittent things, pictures, etc. Folk City at 50, spelled out. This day and age, you just punch all that stuff up and it'll come up. There's all kinds of... Really, I got into this 10 years ago because Mike Porco did not have a presence on the internet. And I changed that, and I did. So you look up Mike Porco's name, and you'll find a lot of history about his unbelievable club and the things he did.
Bob Porco, you're doing your grandfather proud. Thanks so much for inviting me to be on this very special show. It means so much to me. Let's get the word out, and I look forward to seeing you on Friday 24th, Gertie's Folk City 60th reunion at the Iridium in Times Square. Thanks, Bob, and Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy 2020.
Thanks for listening to the Wall of Power Radio Hour. This is your host, Paul Metz. I produce the show, engineered by the great Brett Johnson in the basement of AM 950 Studio in Eden Prairie, which is neither Eden nor Prairie. We'd like to thank our guest, Bob Porco. Great preview of the show coming up that I am honored to play and be invited to play at the Iridium on Friday, January 24th, celebrating the 60th anniversary of one of the greatest music venues in the world. Follow me at paulmetza.com. I got a bunch of great stuff coming up. My book, Alphabet Jazz, should roll out about end of February, beginning of March. We'll let you know more about that. Strike another match, go start anew in 2020. Like my dad used to tell me, remember to be kind and make someone happy. Strong.